So we come to the third episode in the story of Ruth and Naomi, and I've entitled it Preparing for the Future. I want to start by looking at a couple of some background which will help us understand what's happening in these last two chapters of Ruth. When God made a covenant with Abraham, he promised him two things. He promised him the gift of descendants and the gift of land. And under the Old Testament covenant law, there were provisions made to ensure the continuance of both family and land possession. And we're going to look at a couple of those provisions. The first is what's called the Levir, or the Levirate marriage. If the husband in a Hebrew marriage died leaving no descendants, it was the responsibility of the Levir to marry his brother's wife and raise up descendants for his dead brother. So if the husband dies, then the nearest brother is meant to marry and raise up an heir for his dead brother, so that that would preserve his name in Israel and, particularly important, retain his proportion of the land. In our Western mindset, it may seem like a really strange thing. However, it highlights an aspect of marriage that I think we have largely lost in the West. In our society, we have privatized marriage. It has become a matter of personal preference and lifestyle choice. And we have lost sight of its social dimension. It seems to me, if we look at marriage in the Bible, marriage is God's design, not just for personal fulfillment, although it is that, but also for the ordering of society. So that was the law relating to the Levir. And then there was another law relating to what in Hebrew is known as the Goel, which is the Hebrew word for redeemer. Boaz was described in our reading as the guardian redeemer. In some other versions, he's called the kinsman redeemer. And one of the responsibilities of the guardian redeemer was what's called the redemption of land. The promised land was divided up by families. When they took over the land, each family was given a proportion of land, and that was to be their perpetual possession in the land. And under covenant law, the family was meant to retain possession. So if a man became poor and had to sell his land, then the Goel had the right to buy that land and hold it on trust for that person so that it would remain in the family. And if a man didn't have someone who could fulfill that for him, then what would happen would be every 70th year, there was the year of Jubilee. And in the year of Jubilee, the land would return to its original owner anyway. So that God made provision that people always had their allocated land. It was part of his covenant commitment. So these two laws ensured, A, the continuance of the family and the continued possession of the land, fulfilling the promise which God gave to Abraham for descendants and for possession of the land. So we come to Ruth chapter 3. Just as we saw in chapter 1, our writer marks the end of episode 2 with a statement that connects back to the beginning and anticipates the theme of the next chapter. It says at the end, Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley harvest, the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, the historic tradition in our part of the world in the West is that the man will usually make the proposal of marriage. But there also is this idea that in a leap year, the woman has the opportunity to do that. And so what I want to do for you now is lay out a biblical pattern as to how the woman might do that. You need to take careful note, those of you to whom this applies. You need to find your intended asleep in the office after a busy day at work and a good business lunch. And you sneak in, remove his shoes and his socks. And when he wakes up at midnight with cold feet, you pop the answer. Now, that is in many ways precisely what Ruth did. Because this expression, spread the corner of your garment over me, is in fact a proposal for marriage. In Old Testament terminology, adultery was conceived as uncovering a woman's nakedness. And by contrast, marriage is viewed as covering of the woman's nakedness. In Ezekiel 16, God describes Israel's relationship to him as that of an adulterous wife. And God's marriage to Israel is described in verse 8 of that chapter in this way. When I looked at you, I saw you were old enough for love. I spread the corner of my garment over you and covered your nakedness. I gave you my solemn oath and entered into covenant with you, and you became mine. So what Ruth is doing is actually asking Boaz if he will marry her. Now, I think for Ruth, that must have been a risky adventure. I think as you read the story, you can almost feel Ruth's heart pounding as she approaches Boaz in the darkness of the night. She has no idea how he's going to react and what the outcome of this will be, but she followed her mother-in-law. It's interesting, isn't it, to see that mother-in-law is starting scheming on behalf of Ruth. Naomi has emerged from her guilt and all the grief that she felt because of the events of chapter 1. And she is beginning to look outward. She's beginning to think about Ruth and her future and is no longer absorbed with her own hurt. And she is laying this carefully devised plan to find a husband for Ruth. You know, the end of the barley and the wheat harvest would have also meant the end of provision for Naomi and Ruth. There would be nowhere left to glean. And so finding a husband for Ruth would also secure the future for both Ruth and for Naomi. And Naomi clearly describes the principle that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. She instructs Ruth to make a move after Boaz has enjoyed the satisfaction of a good meal. And I want to continue with one of the major themes of Ruth, which we talked about the other week, the theme of Hesed. Once again, we see that this Hesed, kindness, loyal devotion, is at the heart of the story. Ruth's marriage to Boaz is seen as an act of Hesed. He says to her, this, your kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. And now he's making a reference to the encounter they had in the harvest fields, where he expressed appreciation for her selfless care of Naomi. And here was an even greater act of kindness. Boaz says, you've not run after the younger men. It seems to me that Ruth clearly was an attractive lady. She could have had her choice of any of the yuppies of the town with their fast chariots and their fat bank balances. But instead, she chose to marry an older man, Boaz, in order to provide for her mother-in-law, Naomi. Here was again the deep loyalty that led Ruth to sacrifice going back to her own country, her own family, everything that she was familiar with, and the possibility of finding a husband among her own people. She sacrificed all that to come back with Naomi to Bethlehem and care for her mother-in-law. And here was another act of that same kindness, that loyal devotion to her mother-in-law, that drove Naomi to be willing to undergo this marriage to Boaz in order to care for her. And Boaz's response is also seen as an act of Hesed. Old Testament scholars are not sure whether the responsibilities of the goel also included marriage to the bereaved wife. It's within the law, it's obviously clearly the responsibility of the brother-in-law, the levir, to take on that. But whatever the responsibilities of the goel, it is quite clear that Boaz was not next in line. So he had no real obligation to fulfill this. That responsibility fell to someone else. So Boaz's choice to be willing to undergo marriage to Ruth is also viewed by the reader as an act of kindness. Though having said that, he does get a rather attractive wife out of the deal. You see, if Boaz is to marry Ruth, it will mean that his firstborn son will become Elimelech's heir, not his heir. And that's quite a sacrifice. The writer clearly intends that we see Boaz's marriage to Ruth as an act of his hasid. So I want you to notice the journey that Ruth has made, that Naomi has made. Notice the journey that Naomi has made. After the devastating experiences of chapter 1, Naomi is emerging from the bitterness they caused and heading towards future blessing. And the key factor in this change in Naomi is what we've called hesed, the loyal devotion of Ruth and the generous kindness of Boaz, their expressions of hesed towards Naomi. And as Naomi begins to look outward and think about the needs of others, the disappointment and the bitterness that she feels dissolves and is replaced by hope. And it's a testimony to the healing power of human kindness. The Apostle Paul tells us that kindness is one of the results of the Holy Spirit at work in our lives. In showing kindness to others, we are also following the example of Jesus, of whom it was said he went about doing good. And of course, the greatest good that Jesus did was when he went to the cross to take upon himself the penalty of our sin. And he did that so that we could experience forgiveness, acceptance by God, be adopted as his much-loved children, and be given a future inheritance in heaven. And these, the two themes of Ruth, sovereignty and kindness, come together to demonstrate how God works through simple acts of human kindness. Although he is seldom mentioned in the book, he is clearly at work. And through simple acts of kindness, he transforms life, not only for Naomi, but as we shall see in the next episode, God had a much larger purpose in mind. So you won't want to miss episode 4 of Naomi and Ruth. In the 2007 film Even Almighty, Morgan Freeman plays the role of God, and he pressurizes a congressman, Evan Baxter, to build an ark against much ridicule from the fellow members of Congress and his local community. But when a nearby dam wall bursts and the town is flooded, the people and the animals board the ark and are saved. And we're going to watch a short clip of a conversation between God, played by Morgan Freeman, and Evan.
So you're really him, aren't you?
You want more proof? I haven't done the pillar of salt thing in a while.
That's all right. I believe you. I don't understand why you chose me.
You want to change the world, son. So do I.
What? Why an ark? I mean, that's like flood territory. You wouldn't do that again. You wouldn't do that. Would you do that?
Let's just say that whatever I do because I love you.
Well, then you have to understand that this whole building an ark thing is really not part of my plans here. I need to settle into my house. I need to make a good impression at work. What?
Your plans.
What are you talking? We're talking about an ark, right? I mean, an ark? An ark is huge. I don't even know where I would begin.
Well, I hear that a lot. People want to change the world, don't know how to begin. You want to know how to change the world, son? One act of random kindness at a time.
Over to you. This week, pray that you will find someone that you can show kindness to. You have no idea the impact that might make. We're going to finish our service. I'm going to invite the band back. We're going to finish our service with a song, Beauty for Brokenness. Alison tells me this was written some years ago for Tear Fund, who obviously engaged in worldwide mission, showing kindness to people who need it on behalf of the church. And for us, it's a prayer that God would equip us to do good in a broken and hurting world.